couple of things were noted in the panel that preceded this one that I think may be relevant. First one was that one of the presenters made the observation that the market will seek the level of quality of service that's appropriate, and I think the difficulties that our primary panelists couldn't make it and couldn't be here via the internet or the internet maybe indicates one of those quality of service products. I'm not totally sure, but that's what the market's going to give us, and that's what they want. So be it. The other thing was the approach to regulation as the March of Dimes approach. And I think it's useful to consider whether or not, in fact, universal service is also a March of Dimes situation. As when I was preparing for coming over here today, some of the folks know a whole lot more about universal service than I do, pointed out to me that in 1996, when the Act was approved, the penetration rate nationally for telephone subscribership was about 93, a little over 93%. Besides the fund, coincidentally, at that time, the high cost limit was about $1.2 billion. The punchline is that in the last week or so, the FCC released penetration data, and oddly enough, it was a little over 93% national. The high cost on now stands, a portion of the universal service on now stands at something over $4 billion. So I have to ask myself, and I think it's useful for policymakers to ask themselves, why is the goal of universal service not changing the benchmark that we're looking at, the telephone penetration, but the size of the fund keeps expanding? From an engineering perspective, we keep being told that costs are going down, that the new network technology is cheaper, it's more efficient, and yet universal service funding continues to grow, and our objective continues to stay at the same place. So I think these are just useful things to think about. I certainly wouldn't advocate that we do away with the universal service fund, although I think it's time for the policymakers to take a good hard look at what the objectives are and whether or not the amount of money that's poured into meeting those objectives is being used efficiently or appropriately. I did have one slide that I wanted to put up that I think really gives sort of the context of where Florida stands in the whole universal service realm. So if you'll indulge me for just a second. There we go. I put this together a little bit hastily, so you need to look at it carefully while I try to explain what it's telling us. Under the high cost entry there, you see 2005, 91 million minus 274 million. The 91 million is the level of support that foreign carriers receive in 2005. The 274 million is the amount that Florida consumers contributed to the fund in 2005. So Florida was a net contributor to the fund by about $183 million. As you work your way down to each of the various programs, you see essentially the same result. Florida is a net contributor, and this was these are sort of allocated, but it's not, the dollars are not targeted to a particular program, but it's a pro rata share. And then on the right-hand side, you see the size nationwide of each aspect of the fund. So Florida is very concerned about growth in the fund and about expanding the use of the fund to address other things that may cause this deficit that Florida experiences to be greater than it currently is. We are the number one net contributor to the economy nationwide. So that's sort of the context from which Florida Commission and my comments today come from. I don't know that there's a whole lot of disagreement between some of the things that Tom said and some of the things that the Florida Commission has taken positions on. For example, we recently filed comments in relation to the auction proposals suggested that it was important to take a look at the competitive ETCs, and particularly the wireless ones, which make up about 80% of all competitive ETCs nationwide. There are some aspects of wireless support that are troubling, I guess is the best way to put it. That time would be critical, particularly in the wireless industry, and because they are heavy contributors to the fund as well as big recipients. But the level of support, for example, for a high-cost fund support for a competitive carrier is based on the support that the incumbent carrier receives. And so it doesn't tie to the cost of that competitive ETC receiving support. It's related to the cost of the network being maintained by the incumbent ETC. And that just seems fundamentally inappropriate if your objective is to try to get reasonable service at a reasonable price to an end user. Why is it necessary to support a number of different network technologies in order for that consumer to have access to the system? It becomes a lot more costly. A lot of that growth that we talked that I indicated in the fund from 96 to the present time is a result of that sort of duplicate funding that's going to competitive ETCs, and again, a large portion of those competitive ETCs are wireless providers. As far as the auction proposal, Florida Commission basically took the position that, hey, auctions might be a good way to try to rein in the growth of the fund in certain circumstances. But the devil is in the details. And as Tom indicated, this company supports looking at that as particularly as it applies to wireless carriers. And that is something that the Florida Commission, I would say, totally endorses, but certainly believes that that's an appropriate first step to look at. But that's not a panacea because there are only multiple ETCs in about 40% of the study areas that Universal Service supports. So there are problems other than just the ETCs. Tom touched on broadband, and again, I think that this is something that at least me personally can agree with. We did some data from the University of Florida Business, Bureau of Economic and Business Research survey data that indicates that about 30% of the people in Florida don't have any kind of internet access at all. They don't purchase it. Not that it's not available, it's that they don't take it. And nationwide estimates are in that same ballpark, but there are about 30% of households in the country that don't have PCs. So it seems to me there's a fundamental disconnect between the notion that the universal service fund ought to be used to provide ubiquitous broadband when they're it's going to be in place and there's going to be investment made. There are going to be a significant number of households that can't take advantage of it, even if you get it. So I believe that in many respects, that's going to be the cart before the horse. I think part of the problem is that while the president and the current administration has indicated that there's a desire to see if it was dropping. There really and truly is not a well-articulated, coherent public policy on how to meet that goal. And unfortunately, the Universal Service Fund seems to be a model that's out there that folks who really want to see this happen can attack as a way to make it happen. And again, this is a more personal position than a public service commission position, but I just think that's an inappropriate vehicle. And certainly, I think if our primary presenter could have been here today, part of his presentation related to a lot of the flaws in the Universal Service Fund. And I certainly think that if you want to approach the process of ubiquitous broadband, that you might be better off starting off with a brand new plan to do that, rather than trying to glom onto a program that already has identifiable flaws. So,
before we go to the audience, let me just ask a question to both of you guys here.